Welcome, CJ, to Writers Series.
Thank you so much, Sasha. I'm delighted to be here.
We're going to celebrate the badass grandma who is an author, a speaker, and I believe in life. Sometimes our setbacks serve as a setup to our story. You are a danger expert. What is a danger expert, and how did that set the tone for how you started writing and communicating?
I became a danger expert as a profession after I'd spent some years as a victim advocate. I myself had been molested as a child and then sexually assaulted as a teenager and had not dealt with it for years. I had severe PTSD. And then in 1990, I got into therapy and started getting help. And at that same time, I started volunteering for the local rape crisis center. And I loved that work. And I started going to college to went back to college after dropping out when I was 19. And I decided to study humanities with an emphasis in human violence. So I got my master's degree in human violence. And at the same time I was working on that degree, I took over as executive director of a child advocacy center for abused children. After I got my degree and worked there for a couple of years, I went to the North Carolina Attorney General's office, where I was a director of victims' issues. But as you know, Sasha, dealing with crime after it happens and dealing with predators is a very dark field. It's a very heavy field to be in. And I became extremely frustrated by the number of by dealing with crime before, excuse me, after it happens. I wanted to do something to keep from happening at all. So I became an entrepreneur and started developing technologies to help victims of crime. And then when I had grandchildren in 2015, I started having nightmares about every awful thing happening to them that I know can happen. And so I started writing books for parents about how to raise their kids to be little mini bad butts who can protect and defend themselves when the parents aren't around.
Oh my, I could relate to it because, as I shared earlier, I have contributed business services working alongside law enforcement. It can be a dark field because there's another reality that exists. For educational purposes, is there any type of mindset or behaviors that parents should abandon and pay more attention to so they don't discount what is happening around their children?
Well, one of the myths is that if the children are in sight, they can keep anything bad from happening to them. But unfortunately, that's not true. I was actually at a swimming pool one day with my son, who was 12 years old at the time, and he was all the way across the pool, and I saw an older man sidle up next to him, and I saw the expression on my son's face, and I knew something was happening. And I had to decide whether I was going to run on water to get to him or go around the side of the pool. And I decided to run around, obviously, screaming the whole time, "Get that man." The guy jumped out of the pool, hightailed it out of the building. We never caught him, but he was trying to molest my son. I was right there in front of him. And there are things that happen in the home that parents may not be aware of. For example, a child's more likely to be abused by another juvenile than by a parent.
How would you define the word molest? Because some people think that some sexual act has to happen in order for them to be molested.
Molestation can include actual touching, sexual acts, things like that, but can also include having the perpetrator get naked in front of the child and make the child view him naked. I'm going to use him a lot, or make the child take off their clothes so the predator can view the child. It can be inappropriate comments that are demeaning and sexual in nature. So it includes a lot more than actual touching, although that usually is where it leads over time, is to actual touching.
You are also the author of Badass Parenting and Heroic Parenting. What are the themes that you stress in there?
The books are for parents of kids 0 to 9. My next book, Raising Badass Kids, is coming out in November for parents of tweens and teens. I stress many things. There's so much to know that the parents can do to empower themselves and their kids to keep them from ever being harmed. And so, for example, teaching your child about stranger dangers is another myth. Child's much more likely to be molested or abused by someone they know. But I cover who the predators are. I cover the types of abusers, bullying, cyberbullying, online dangers, which is where crime's really going up in a bad way. I cover kidnapping, sexual assault, molestation. In the new book, I cover sex trafficking and sexual consent, about sexual consent. And then I break it down according to the child's age and maturity level about how to have a conversation with them about these things, how to introduce these ideas for how they can protect themselves without scaring them to death.
What makes your type of writing unique? What is the tone? How are you relatable to parents? Because some people may view it as maybe a science book, or it could be a very conversational connection.
That's a great question. It's a very conversational book and it's actually entertaining. I made it very snarky and sometimes inappropriate, but I did so for a reason. Parents are so busy and looking at a book filled with dark matter like, sexual molestation and assault can be very daunting. And so I made it entertaining so they would keep on reading. So I, swear in the books a little bit. Badass parenting is the one that's a little more inappropriate. Heroic parenting is PG rated. It's interesting because they sell 50-50, but raising badass kids is kind of a mixture of both, except it's for older kids. And it's like everything parents and kids need to know about how to stay safe in a world that we live in right now. People think actually, Sasha, that the world is a more dangerous place than when we were kids. It's safer now, one-on-one crimes, it's safer now than when I was a kid in the 60s. Where crime is really going up, as I alluded to a minute ago, is online. And that's where it's getting more dangerous for kids and adults as well.
Returning to the addiction, I appreciate that you keep your message real because we live in a world of there's so much political correctness that people are being cheated out of a reality check.
Yeah, they are. I tell it like it is. This badass grandma, I don't play.
And especially given the matter that needs attention, it's about keeping the community safe. It's not about just protecting a specific person. We all get impacted by that.
Yes, we do. It's a very timely book because people are becoming more aware of how dangerous things are online. And because parents are so stressed and so afraid for their kids in the real world when they don't necessarily have to be. They can, by giving your child positive messages about how they can trust their intuition, for example, and set boundaries that they can defend and say no to adults and other kids that are making them uncomfortable, you're giving them the tools and the confidence, and confidence is the number one predator repeller. You're giving them the tools and the confidence to be able to extract themselves from situations that can be tricky.
With the type of work I do, I also notice that adults are not always well-versed with boundaries. What are one or two ways of establishing boundaries for people who struggle with this?
And people who have experienced some sort of trauma often do have trouble with boundaries themselves. And parents don't think to teach kids about boundaries. That's something you're the world you're supposed to figure out as you navigate your way through the world, but it doesn't work that way. So a couple things you can do is actually an exercise, sitting down and write, making a I like to do the circle exercise, especially with kids, where you write down who you trust most in the middle of the small circle, and that, of course, is yourself. And then a larger circle, hopefully you put yourself in the middle of the circle, but then a larger circle for people in your life that you trust, your parents, an aunt or uncle, your best friend, a teacher, something like that. And then widening circles for people that you know and they're okay. But then you need to look really closely at who you or your child put outside all the circles, because those are people that are not to be trusted. And there's a reason why your child especially would put someone on an outside a circle that you need to investigate. And so understanding who you can trust in your life helps you to recognize, first of all, that you deserve to be protected. A lot of survivors have difficulty with that. And then secondly, that there are things you can do by like trusting your intuition and acting on it that are going to help you to maintain the boundaries that you create for yourself. And boundaries can be as simple as nobody touches your private parts except mommy or daddy or a doctor when it's necessary. Simple things you can teach your child from the time they're in diapers that can help protect them later on.
Because you write a lot, what are some of the lessons that you've learned about the craft of writing?
I've learned that I'm a nonfiction writer. I've written one fiction book, but I'm mostly a nonfiction writer, that I can write anywhere, anytime, anyhow. And I don't get writer's block. I can write at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I love to write at 3 o'clock in the morning, actually. I love to do an all-nighter when I'm writing because I get into the flow of it and it gets easier as I go. I've learned that when it comes to topics like I'm dealing with where there's a lot of data that I have to incorporate into the book, and a lot of research I have to do, that it's hard to be conversational when you're introducing statistics and things like that. You're not trying to scare the parents, but you've got to present the information in a realistic way so that they can know what they're up against. And so I would say in the craft of writing, what I've learned most is that when I let go and go with the flow, I do my best writing. I was initially trained as a photojournalist in the Marine Corps back in 1981, and that's where I learned solid writing skills. that have served me my entire life. So anybody who's thinking about writing a book, writing a blog, whatever, that's another place where you can trust your intuition. Just start writing. You'd be surprised with what you can come up with. And then the editing process, that's a whole different conversation. It's a longer conversation.
Thank you for bringing up about the U.S. Marine photojournalism days, because I was going to ask you, what does a photojournalist do?
I got to do everything. I got to do multiple stories every single day. I got to interview infantrymen and generals and movie stars. I got to stand on the skids of a helicopter and fire a machine gun. I got to fire an anti-tank weapon. Oh my gosh, every single day was an adventure because I got to do something different. And it was so exciting to me, and it kind of spoiled me, because for the rest of my career, I've been seeking out opportunities where they're very entrepreneurial, where I get to decide what I'm going to do next. And it's different every day.
When you're not writing, when you're not speaking, what type of information do you imbibe? What do you enjoy reading?
I love nonfiction books, but I was kind of a snob, to be perfectly honest with you. I was kind of a snob about, well, I read nonfiction and I don't dabble in fiction. And that was so egotistical and short-sighted, because I have a dear friend who is also a writer who was reading all of the Pulitzer Prize winning books. And she was like, what's wrong with you? There's good stuff out there. And I started reading really good fiction, and I just get lost in it. I love it so much. But mostly, I still mostly read nonfiction, self-help, spirituality, things like that. But I enjoy good fiction. Orphan Master's Son and A Boy's Dog at the End of the World. I mean, just there are fantastic writers out there who are just, I don't feel like I could write at their level when it comes to fiction at all. So that's why I stick to my lane.
You also have worked as a forest firefighter, which I thought was very cool. How was that introduced in your path, and what was it like?
After high school, I was kind of floundering. I didn't know what I was going to do next. I'd gone to college when I was still in high school, but I'd just gotten sexually assaulted, and I was traumatized by that and didn't know what I was going to do next. And there was an opportunity to go to a young adult conservation corps Forest Service camp and live there at the camp with 80 other mostly guys, which was, you know, I was one of 8 girls out of 80 something guys. It was pretty fun, where I became an actual forest firefighter, and I enjoyed that. And actually, that's my very first writing experience, because I took over the camp newsletter, Yakety Yak, did a Dear Gabby column and wrote the newsletter.
As for writing tips, is there a writing tip introduced to, or did you discover, that has made an immense difference in your life?
For me, I need to have the first sentence in place before I can write. I can't start in the middle of a book. I can't start in the middle of a column. I can't start in the middle of an article. I'll walk around with a pad, and I'll just pace. And then the first line will come to me, and the rest of it just whooshes, pours out. I would say there is no normal way of writing. Everybody is so unique. And there's no need to question yourself because you like to write at 3 o'clock in the morning and you don't like to write at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or you like to have your little coffee set up by your table and get it all perfect. That's do you, boo. I mean, it's just whatever works.
Do you enjoy the writing part or the editing part?
The writing part, definitely. The writing part. Editing is excruciating for me sometimes, because I want to find exactly the right word. And so it's almost like emotionally painful to go through that process of trying to find just the right word, just the right term. And I like to use big words, and I could be better at talking even more conversationally if I did not use 50-cent words, but I love them. I love to find just the right word that captures the essence of what I'm trying to put out there for the reader.
But that also tells us you must be very patient if you're waiting for the right word.
Patience is not one of my virtues. Not at all. When it comes to writing, I think it is, though. But in every other area of my life, patience is not a virtue that I possess.
And finally, are there any new projects that you're working on?
I just took an op-ed writing course through the op-ed project, which was phenomenal. It's called Write to Change the World. And they bring in writers of varying backgrounds, you know, mostly women and LGBT and people of color and things like that, and teach them about how to refine their voice through op-ed articles so that they can be out there, their voices can be out there in the world, and not just, you know, straight white guys making all the noise, that we can get out there and make our own noise, and we can get out there and make our own impact. And so I'm working on an op-ed piece now that I hope to get placed in the New York Times. And I'm very excited about that.
Very well said. And CJ, you're welcome to let audiences know where they can contact you.
Absolutely. My website is cjscarlett.com, and that's C-J-S-C-A-R-L-E-T. Not like Ms. Scarlett from Gone with the Wind, but more like Ms. Scarlett from Clue, with just one T. And my email is cj@cjscarlett.com, and I'm very accessible. So if anybody has any questions, they can write to me. My next book is coming out on November 15th, and I look forward to doing a big book launch for that book.
CJ Scarlett, thank you for joining us on Writer Series.
Thank you for having me, Sasha. Have a lovely day.